The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 18, 2004. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. It's good to see you all here this bright, sunny morning in midwinter. It's wonderful. Well, this morning I thought I'd talk about one aspect of meditation. A few weeks ago I talked about, you know, we have this three basic points I always like to make in meditation instruction, that with meditation we want to be, often we're very concerned about quantity, but we're more concerned with quality here, I think. And so we want to know how much should we sit, you know. But that first point is regularity, far more important. And I'm going to say something about that today. But these other two points, just to review them quickly. The second point is the sitting with others, also very important. I think sometime I might give a talk just to that as well. A few weeks ago, though, I talked on that third point, which is no judgment. And I don't know. Did you catch that? Did you notice I was talking about that? I didn't really say that so much. I was talking about meaninglessness and meaning. But that's another way of looking at that third point. That when our mind is caught up in judgment, our mind is caught up in looking for meaning, that this means that. We always want to know what things mean. We want to put them in some form that we can, so we can get hold of them. Well, what it really means is that we're not here. We're projecting ourselves out of the moment and looking for something else out there. So I talked about that third point, about no judgment in that way, a few weeks ago. Today I want to talk about this first point, but I think perhaps in a way that I haven't done before. This first point of regularity, extremely important in our practice. You know, far more important, I think, than we normally appreciate. It took me years, actually, really to appreciate just how important this was. When I got this instruction from my teacher, he would come back to it repeatedly, but it took some time and my own experience to realize the importance of what it was he was pointing out there. And I've talked about this, and of course, when you talk about something, then you bring it up again, and you bring it up again, pretty soon it starts to sound, oh yeah, yeah, regularly, I've heard that before, you know, and then the ears kind of glaze over and we stop listening. Well, I'm going to talk about it again, but this is maybe in a different way. You know, very often we approach, say, a practice of meditation, the way we approach pretty much anything. We're going to do it. We've got some purpose in mind, yeah, some meaning, that sort of thing. But also, we do it with the idea, well, I'm going to take up meditation, so here's meditation now. This is meditation. It looks like this. It starts at this time, it ends at that time. And it's a practice that people take up. We picture someone sitting in a cross-legged posture, but we know, of course, you don't absolutely have to sit in a cross-legged posture. You could be in a kneeling posture, you could be in a chair. But we have very definite ideas about meditation, that it becomes a particular thing. And it's different from other things that we as human beings do. We set aside a special time for meditation. It doesn't look like other kinds of things that we do. Somebody once told me that, I think they saw a bumper sticker or something like that, that meditation is hazardous while driving or something like that. Because we think meditation is somehow different from driving. And of course, you don't want to be doing something else while you're driving. You got to be driving. So this is just one of the many ways that we look at this practice of meditation. And it fits our normal way of looking at things, where everything is compartmentalized. Everything's very clear, you know, because something is distinctly this and something is distinctly that. And of course, we put a label on it, you know, that, you know, if this is meditation, it is distinctly this particular thing that we call meditation. Well, if we understand meditation in this way, what we don't understand is that we are giving ourselves a very difficult time with this practice of meditation. We're making it very hard on ourselves. We're making it hard on ourselves to continue to take it up, to continue to practice it. Because we think it's something that's, well, we got to set aside other things now, and then we have to do our meditation. And also when we talk about doing it with regularity, well, these times when we maybe don't want to do our meditation, they don't necessarily happen when the schedule, you know, says that's okay, you don't have to do your meditation now. Yeah, very often the schedule will say it's time to do meditation, you don't feel like it, but with that regularity, now we're feeling there's some resistance there. It becomes hard for us to do that, to take it up. Maybe we can press on for a while. You know, we have the 100-day practice period to encourage us, you know, to get into this and to make a regular practice of this meditation, just to take it up and do it formally in a regular way with other people. That's hard to maintain that. As anybody who's done the 100 days, you know, by the end of that 100 days, you're starting to feel, you know, kind of tired. But a lot of this is coming simply from, I wouldn't say a lot, I would say it is all coming from the fact that we see the meditation as something special, different from other activities that we are doing, such as driving a car. If we really understand meditation, we can drive a car. In fact, I would say if you were in meditation while driving a car, now you can really drive that car because you are really present with driving that car and everything that belongs to it. You know, the traffic and the weather, you know, all of that. So I want to talk about a way of looking at a meditation that is different from this. And I would say this is the way to understand meditation. It is something that we probably come to very slowly. I certainly did. Because I thought of meditation just like I would think of anything else. It has a name, it has a form, and you know. So there it is, there's meditation. And then there's this other stuff called not meditation. Well, there's another way of understanding this and realizing your life. You know, a few weeks ago, too, I also used this, that spectrum, you know, of where some kind of teachings are very easy to get into, you know, very basic. We can get into those very easily. And we go over to this other end of the spectrum where it's very difficult now to understand the teachings. They become very very subtle, very profound. It's hard to understand what the teacher is pointing out here. You know, we've got Nagarjuna over here and that sort of thing. A lot of Dogen is over there. And as I said then, too, that these teachings that are kind of easy to get into, that's great, they're easy to get into, but you also tend to get stuck there because they have a lot of gimmicks, a lot of handles, a lot of things that will hold you. And basically, we want to, when we take up this practice, what we really want, our heart's desire is to get over here to where we can wake up. But as we move in this direction, it becomes very difficult to understand even what is being pointed out until finally we get to the end. There's nothing there that we can grasp whatsoever. Well, in a similar fashion, I'm going to draw now another continuum here. It'll be a different kind of continuum, but if you can just picture now this continuum, and this continuum is your life. It's just right here. Here's your life right there. Okay. And we'll think like, well, there's birth and then I'm living my life and I'm, you know, there's this continuum of my life and then there's death. You know, we don't know exactly when that's going to be, but that, you know, we can see it that way. This seems to be a definite point, and oh, by and by, this will become a definite point, at least for somebody. You know, I might not be aware of it, but it'll have a definite point. Now, that's what we think. That's how we see our life. And, of course, now with our usual way of understanding the things that we take up in our life, and in particular I want to talk about meditation, we'll see our life is going on like this, on this continuum, and then every once in a while we're doing something called meditation. See, we take up this practice of meditation. Let's say that activity of meditation, we're going to mark it in blue, right? So we put, boom, there's meditation. And now I'm not doing meditation. Now it's white or whatever color, I don't know. And we go along again. Now, wait, meditation again, boom, blue. So after a while, we start getting these blue dots on this continuum of our life. But they're interspersed with these gaps of, maybe other colors or just plain white, you know. And that's kind of how we think of meditation. And when we think of meditation in this way, well, other things start to associate with that. We get the idea of, I should meditate. Or I need to meditate more. Or, you know, I've had a rough week, you know. I think I ought to meditate. Maybe that would help me out with that. Or I've had a rough week, you know, I'm too tired to meditate. I'm not going to do that. And it could be any, you know, we can go anywhere with this. But this is very common for us to think in this way. I can assure you a Buddha never thinks in this way. Just bear that in mind if you can catch yourself thinking in this way, because a Buddha would never think in this way. They just don't. But we'll have this, we have ideas that meditation is good for me. You know, I really ought to take it's good for others. You know, you ought to do this too. And then we start bothering other people. You know, you got to take this up, you know. Well, this is all coming from understanding meditation as some special activity that you take up from time to time. And but what is this meditation? And more importantly, well, what do you suppose is going on in between these spots where the dots are? Well, you're off the hook now and you can just goof off and not pay attention and what? What do we think is going on there? No, this is not the way a Buddha, an awakened person, would understand meditation and the practice of meditation. So we end up with, the way they see it, you end up with a completely different picture, which, you know, I can paint this picture for you on this continuum, and you'll get a certain portion of it, but there'll be a portion of it I suspect will be utterly baffling to you, and I'll try to deal with that too, but I don't know if I can. But it's going to look like this, for one who's awake. What they see as meditation, here's the continuum of your life here. First of all, they don't see it running like from the past to the present to the future. They don't see that. It's just here's the continuum of your life, period. That's it. This is your life. It appears like this. They don't see blue dots, you know, boom, boom, you know, boom, 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 you know. No, what they see, this is a continuum of your life. And with meditation, if meditation is going to be painted blue, then this continuum of your life just starts to become blue. It just gets bluer and bluer and bluer and bluer. That is how they see meditation. That gradually, as we take up this practice of meditation, our life becomes the color of meditation. Meditation isn't something that we take up for a moment and then we drop and we forget. Or we leave it alone. Or meditation isn't something where we rush here, we get to the zendo in time and dash in before they close the doors and ring the bell. If we have this understanding of the blue dots being thrown onto that spectrum, well then of course we might have that attitude. But if you understand your meditation as here's your life, and you now allow your life just to become the color of meditation, then it isn't that there's some time that is meditation and some time that is not meditation. Of course, there's those times when you're thinking of meditation or when you're taking up actively, you know, practicing meditation, with your intention is to be here and to be present. Of course, there are those times when that's not the case at all. But if our understanding is that, well, that's meditation and this isn't meditation, then we don't understand this practice of meditation. Nor will we have a mind that can just take it up for 100 days or for a lifetime. Eventually we become kind of tired of it, or intermittently we become tired of it. And we want to give it up or drop it, or we forget about it for a while. And then we feel like, well, you know, I should meditate. And then we take it up again. So this is called constancy. This practice, this understanding of our practice. the Bodhisattva way is done with constancy, that if we just step into it and we take it up. Now, of course, our mind might wobble, we drop away, we forget, but as soon as we remember, we just step right back into it with calmness, with serenity, we continue on, we take it up again in the next moment. And in the very next moment, even if you're not sitting in a cross-legged position on a cushion, you're driving a car, having a conversation, whatever it is, we can step back into the moment and take it up. For one who is awake, this is what they see, this is what they understand. What is it that we're doing when we're sitting on a cushion? Well, of course, there we might deliberately take some time to, and we should do this with some regularity, to regularly establish some times where that is our intention, to just minimize our activity and to do just that, just to sit there with awareness. Not very much going on. Of course, there might be plenty going on in our mind, but gradually, as the color of our life takes on the color of meditation, there won't be that much going on in your mind. And not in those moments when you deliberately set yourself down to become quiet and still and aware. So this is the way to take up our practice of meditation. And in learning this, this is a very subtle point. I don't know if I've made it clear. But maybe you can get a sense from what I've said that the whole quality of your mind and how you will conduct your life begins to change. That it isn't just, you know, it becomes just smooth. And where the rocks in the road that we hit as we come along, that we can more easily, I don't know, melt around it rather than buck up against it and get thrown off by that. We can begin to just flow like the stream that curls around the rock rather than gets blocked or stopped or tries to drive it away or whatever. So the quality of our life begins to change when we actually understand this practice in that way. We also find it easier just to maintain the practice and to take it up and to establish those times, those regular times in our schedule when we will come in and do some formal meditation, whether at home or here or whatever, but we can set up a time now, and now we can do that, and we can do that 100 days very easily with this understanding and this approach to our meditation. We can also understand that other activities within our life, our job, our interactions with family and this sort of thing, also becomes a part of this practice and this meditation. And in the same way, this also becomes something far easier to deal with. That as we come up against that family member that we've had some conflict with, whatever, we don't have to be like these clumps that come down on that line that's our life, that continuum that's our life, that now has to buck up against some other color that they're dropping down on the lifeline of their life. You know, this is a ridiculous analogy, I suppose, but rather with this gradual bluing, this gradual changing in the color, this softening of the color, and this diffusion of this color of your life, spreading out through your whole life, takes care of this in such a way that now your approach, if it starts to become not approach at all, where you don't really approach anything, but everything just comes up to you and you can deal with it as it comes, because you're not solidly trying to push back with some particular thing, some particular agenda, some particular idea about, oh, I must sit, or I must do that, or you should do that. So everything within our life begins to change when we see it in this way. I think perhaps that part of it might be clear, I hope. At least clearer than the other part that I haven't mentioned, but it's there. Maybe so. I don't know if I want to bring it up, because there's another aspect to what I just said that will appear very strange if you happen to think of it. Anybody think of what I'm thinking? Does anything strike you as being strange about what I just said? About this continuum of your life? And the whole thing starts to become blue?
Well,
Where's the continuum? Yeah. And what about time? You see. You say, well, wait a minute now. I mean, if I take it up now, you mean like even there in my past, that's becoming blue too? So you might think that. And this is a part that will be a little harder for me to tell you. But yeah, it would. Yes. And that is how a Buddha understands this as well. That to a Buddha, what they understand is that time is illusory. That this continuum, it's not a continuum of time as we think. This isn't our life. Our life is right here. It's the whole universe. It is just this, in this moment. It is actually this moment. But this moment isn't a moment in time, as we might think. It is just simply now. And now contains everything. Everything is right here. So as you take up this practice now, everything in your, everything that is your life, it takes on the color of meditation. And so it colors every aspect of your life. One, if that doesn't seem to make sense, you say, well, how could that affect anything happened in the past? Well, we're making the past a little bit too real. We think the past exists as, you know, as the past. I mean, it's back there somewhere and it's real. You know, but actually, there's nothing over. There's no such thing as that. There's just now. And we think, well, how can that be? Well, so you mean if I take up this approach to life now, this attitude, it's going to somehow change that? Well, actually, yes, it does. It changed, but how does it change? It doesn't change it back there. It changes it here. Because the past, what we're calling the past as something back there, is actually now. It's in this very moment now. And we carry it around with us. And it might be loaded with all kinds of regrets, maybe anxieties, you know, maybe longings. Oh, I wish I could go back to those good old days or something like that. Or it could be something in the past that you did that you wish you could go back now and change it. Something like that. But where do you experience this? Well, you're experiencing it right now. This is your past. It is right here, right now. And if you learn to take up your life in this way, this bluing of your life, this taking on the color of meditation, it's not really blue, but I'm just using that. But you take on this color of meditation. You take on this. What are we speaking of, really? We're talking about a mind that takes it up in this way. All of these things that trouble you now about your past begin to heal and begin to take on the same color. And that is one of compassion, one of presence, one of just taking it up, living it without any disturbance or fear or anxiety. Same thing is true of the future. Future, we worry about that future. We want to get everything right in the future. But you can't. The future doesn't exist. There isn't any future as such. Not as we project it out there. No, the future is right here. And the way that we deal with the future is by taking up this moment right here. We think, well, the future will get here. No, actually, the future never gets here. There's just right now, this. But in learning to take this up as the moment unfolds, as it has come to be, as the Buddha said, it both dies and it comes to be. It ceases and it arises, both in this coming to be of right now. And learning to be right here, right now, this is the practice of meditation. And in so doing, you also take care of this this future, the future that is right here. So what are we speaking of then? Just presence of mind, right here, right now. This is the approach, this is the understanding, this is the attitude, and it's really no approach. It's kind of a ceasing of an approach. Meaning like we might have the attitude of, well, I must take up meditation, or I should, or I'm getting sick of meditation, or any of these kinds of things. No, this is just taking it up right now in this moment without comment, without judgment, for no reason to just do this, because this is to live. This is to completely burn your life in the moment. And this is where all the kinds of things that disturb us, that frighten us, that confuse us, get burned away. those are the things that pull us out of the moment. If you look in every case, you will see that you've been pulled out of the moment. But of course, you're not out of the moment. What does that mean? That it means this is just going on in your mind, just your thinking, just your grasping, just your fearing, your longing. And we take up meditation as a way to somehow fix this, and we continue with the same kind of mistake. So this is not only just a way to see meditation in your life, this is really a way of seeing your whole life that allows you just to live it with this steadiness, one foot after the other. This is a constancy. And this can be cultivated simply by, and this is why we kind of probably suggest with people take up meditation. You want to take up a practice of meditation, a very good way to acquire this discipline of constancy is just to set it up with a regular schedule in your life and then just do it. Whether you want to or not, it doesn't matter. You just take that up. Gradually, your life takes on the color of meditation. And whatever else that comes along in your life, you don't like it, whatever, but it's here, you know, it doesn't matter. You can deal with it. Got cancer? Okay, you can deal with it now. Otherwise, it just hits you in a very, very tough way. Okay, well, that's probably all I want to say, but maybe you have some comments or questions on that. Yeah. Well, right. We can, like I say, this is the way to take up everything. It's really just to be there, take it up with this constancy. But that in itself, that way of taking it up, that is the meditation right there. It is done in that way. It is not done as some kind of a band-aid that we, you know, slap on ourselves for the time being, you know, and then we take it off. Do they still define education as change in behavior? Is that still the current definition? That's what it was when I was in college anyway. But your behavior is going to change. It will change if you decide you want to just bring yourself back to this moment and to be here. That's the meditation. Don't think of it as the formal sitting in the cross-legged position. Think of it as being in this moment, bringing yourself back to this moment. And doing that with constancy. Anything else? Yes?
So in the beginning you said that people, you should practice with others. What would be a good balance between practicing with others and maybe practicing at home on your own?
Of course, if you're in a situation where it's difficult, say, to come here or to a place like this, you know, where other people are meditating, then certainly I would recommend taking it up on your own at home if you can. But a good balance between that? Well, I don't know. You know, that's kind of case by case. Everybody has a different situation, so it's hard to recommend. But I think what's important is to establish some kind of a regular schedule of meditation for yourself in the formal sense, but make it something that's doable. Don't have something unrealistic that you can't carry out. Do that. You know, just take it up in such a way that you can carry it out. And then do that. And then I would also say, look for those opportunities where maybe there's a time when you can take up the practice somewhere with a group, or at least one or two people, or even have a friend come over who might want to, you know, something like that. But again, of course, once you do something like that, now that becomes difficult because now they got two of you that might say, well, I don't feel like it tonight, you know. And that's why having a center like this is very helpful, because the schedule does go on here no matter what. But it's for each one of us to just take it up ourselves, you know, with our own heart and to do it. So I would say, you know, first of all, just find out what you can do. Be realistic about it. And look for those opportunities when maybe you can, you know, take up the meditation with others. Yeah. And if you just can't find those opportunities, well, I would still say, you know, try to do it on your own. But I'd also say I'd recommend checking in from time to time with a teacher, you know, as to how you're doing. Because if you are just strictly on your own, that could bring problems by and by. Yeah. Yes?
A friend of mine has in her office a sign that just says breathe.
Yeah.
And just seeing that, going and seeing that and just breathing, was made so much that can bring me back just to that
moment. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's much of this is just a matter of being reminded. You know, we need very little instruction. We mostly need to be reminded. And if we can start to learn to remind ourselves, it isn't like we have to go out and all learn a lot of stuff. Just learn to remind ourselves. And just remind ourselves to breathe. Isn't that strange? To breathe. Yeah. Well, what is it? Of course, we're breathing all the time, but we're not mindful of it, you know. And sometimes, yeah, maybe a sign. A sign can help, you know. But after a while, of course, we ignore the sign, you know. And then we just... That's the problem with these. So, see, at some point, we have to take it up. You know, at some point, you have to realize in this moment, do I want to be here or not? I mean, it's just a matter of this. We have to bring it right here. It wanders off, but just come back with it. Make that your heart. Gradually... You learn to stay here. You learn to breathe mindfully, even if we don't have a sign to remind us. Or at least we can at least be aware of the sign every time we look at it. So another thing with this I should mention, something my teacher used to talk on from time to time, because very often we also get the idea with this practice of regularity that we might even say things like, we'll make a habit of it. If you ever hear me say that, because I think once in a while I catch myself saying something like that, and I don't mean that, actually. I really don't mean that. Because you don't want to make a habit of it. Because when we do make a habit of it, then it becomes, well, like the sign. Pretty soon we just do it habitually and we're not present. And the whole point is to be present. So this isn't about forming a habit, exactly. Like we do the 100-day practice period. Well, we might say to get into the habit, not exactly. But of course, if you got into the habit for a while, that's all right. But at some point, and it becomes like the sign, and you're just doing this now, but you're not really taking it up with any awareness, so you don't, with any understanding of what it is you're doing in this moment. That's the part we have to work on. That's the subtle part. That's the part we so easily slip off from and miss, drop. Yes, David. Yeah.
I think to some extent, once you start on this path, you really don't have a choice. Kind of. I mean, even if you stop, meditating or whatnot, once you realize what it's like to wake up or be more, have that richness of your life and that awareness, even when there's times when you aren't able to meditate because of circumstances or whatever.
Well, strictly speaking, though, but based on what I've said this morning, there really isn't any time when you can't meditate.
Right, I mean, in a formal practice.
In a formal practice, right.
How do you cope with the situations where you can't have because of work or some other family situation, you don't feel like you really have the time to devote to the practice, but yet you know that you're not as blue as you really can be because of circumstances around you that are distracting you.
Well, but we can go right to that directly. Just notice that, what's going on there. Because where is this? You say you're not being allowed to do this or whatever. Well, but who's doing that? That's you. It's not family circumstances, it's not them, it's not something, it's right here. And this is where we have to take up. So we shouldn't lose sight of that. Come right back to that. Notice what you're doing. We're very good at kidding ourselves, making excuses, well, I can't do that, I'm too busy, I'm this and that. Well, I don't think that's right. I myself personally, I'm wall-to-wall busy. I'm busy 24/7. I am. I mean, I've got... you can't be any busier than I am. I'm way too busy for a Zen guy that ought to be. But nevertheless, that's the circumstance I'm in. So, but still you can find those times. Yeah. So you just have, you know, just make that effort to do that. Yes?
When you were talking, I was just thinking about like the idea of the continuum, the life continuum, and then the practice continuum. And I thought, I guess the way I feel about, you know, the life and the all these continuums of that, and for me, it's just easier to think of it like life is a soup. And there's like past, there's elements of past, you put them in there, and then you have the present, and you have thoughts about the future, but they're all, you know, you taste the soup, and oh, this doesn't taste really good. And then when you have like the practice sort of thrown in, you're like, and you taste everything in a different way. It's, the tasting is sort of the conclusion about the soup, because it's, they're all there. It's just the way you taste it might be different.
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm not very linear, so I can't really think of things like this is the past, this is now, and this is, you know.
Yeah. That's right. That's why I was saying too. Yeah. In the end, there's no continuum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you totally. That's good. Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. Just a big soup, and we're all just sitting here stewing. But the beauty of it is, just as you said, you know, the taste is kind of like it's in our hands, so to speak, or in our mouths, maybe. But you know, it depends on you. That tastes bad. Well, do you think it's because that tastes bad? It's not that tastes bad. Where's the taste occurring? It's right here. So if we taste it with awareness, it doesn't taste bad. If we taste it with our thinking, you know, judging, setting one thing aside. Yeah, no, it tastes bad, that tastes good. No, we're tossed away and we're out of the moment. So you just come here, it's just this taste. Is it good? Bad, we can't say. It's just this taste, but we become that taste. Anything else? Yes.
I think I like what you said about, you know, being alert while driving. And personally, I'm just wondering about, you said you can meditate at any time. Do you have any thoughts on consuming alcohol and how that might affect?
Alcohol and driving don't mix. No. Yeah. Oh yeah, I used to know a fellow way back when I was. When I first started meditating with my teacher, and there was a fellow who, he would always have a beer before he'd go over for evening meditation, you know. And I used to have long hair, believe it or not, and even while I was bald. And people called me Ben Franklin at one time. I had that Ben Franklin look. But anyway, but this fellow, he kept telling, let me just trim that hair off. You know, he had some clippers, you know. So finally one day I went over there, and yeah, he trimmed it off. I've been pretty much like this ever since. And then after he cut my hair, it was getting on toward time to go over to the Zendo for evening meditation. And then he pulled a beer out of the refrigerator. He says, you want a beer? And, you know, so I shared a beer with him. But I was thinking at the time, this is probably not such a good idea, you know, to have a beer now. And maybe after Zazen, Uchiyama Roshi, somebody asked him, what do you do for fun? And he thought, kind of puzzled over for a moment, and he says, well, in the evening, you know, after his meditation, before he goes to bed, he has a shot of whiskey. Something like that. Was that to keep his feet warm? Yeah. And like I say, and it's like I said, it's easy for us to kid ourselves, you know. But, no, I would say generally alcohol, if you're going to come in and sit in formal meditation, I wouldn't recommend it. You know, I also don't recommend eating before sitting in meditation. You know, if you're going to come do formal meditation. The reason for that is because the eating, when you eat, it draws the blood gets shunted to the digestive tract here. And away from the brain, you become less alert. It's easy to become very drowsy. You ever notice that after eating? Just watch carefully. You notice you will become slightly drowsy, less alert than you were before you ate. And alcohol will have the same effect too. Of course, alcohol has other dangers too. Some people are, you know, very, very affected by, you know, and you should know yourself well enough, you know. So, but I wouldn't recommend alcohol, certainly not before meditation anyway. And if I did say it, a beer afterward, I don't necessarily mean that either. I'm not encouraging you to take up a beer after sitting either. But I would be careful with the use of alcohol, yeah, you know, or any drug, you know, for that matter. In fact, anything that's going to alter your awareness and your alertness, I'd be, you know, for the most part, I don't think we really need such things. Even the kind of things that make us feel better, you know, happier, you know. Well, we want to alter our brain chemistry in some way so that we feel a little better. Well, if you learn to take up this moment and be in this moment, your brain chemistry will straighten itself out. You won't need that. You don't need some little hit to get you through the day. But this is something that has to be cultivated over time. Yeah. Did I answer your question? Or?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking to get it back. It seems like it would be a challenge to meditate while consuming alcohol because you're decreasing your awareness.
Yeah.
So you did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's where the overachievers are. If you meditate. That's
Well.
He's one of the masses.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I've heard these things, and, but I view them with some suspects. Yeah. Yeah, David.
If you take up meditation and your whole life is turning more blue, and you're able to respond to things as they come up to you, where does taking initiative fit into this?
Oh, well, if you're present in the moment and you see what needs to be done, now you can act. You can act freely. And you're also in a situation where you might realize you have to act, but you don't know what to do. We're also fully aware of that. So now you go ahead and act because you have to act, but you also keep your eyes open. So very often when we think we know what we're doing, or we think we know what the situation calls for, we'll jump into it, but we put the blinders on. So we're not looking around to see the effects of our actions. But if you're present in this moment, you'll be able to do that, to take it up, to deal with it. See, this isn't a call to inactivity. We're always acting. You can't not act. We're always acting. It's a matter of being present in the moment. Well, that's another point, David, you brought up about that what if you don't have a choice or something like that. And strictly speaking, we don't have, right from the very start. You said once you start on this path, it's like you don't have any. We don't have any choice right from the very beginning, in a sense. Or we have one choice. It's this toggle switch of either we can be present or we're not, and that's up to you. And of course, this choice is given to us in each moment. But as to acting or not acting, we have no choice there. We're always acting. All there is action. There's only acting. You show me some rest. You show me some place where something's not acting. Even if you're not acting, everything is acting around you, therefore you're interacting with it. Like the stone sits in the stream, we say, well, the stone isn't doing anything. Well, actually, but the stone is interacting with the stream because everything's flowing around it. See, so the stone is still acting. So is it the stream that's moving, or is it the stone? What's moving, you know? We can also think of the stream as kind of standing still. Of course, there's dynamic curls and things in the stream, but you can also almost think of it in that way. So we don't get to a point of no action. So then if action or not action is not the question, but the question becomes, are we present and aware in this moment? And if we are, that moment when you need to act, you need to take the initiative, it'll be obvious. If we're asleep at the switch, so to speak, it might not be obvious, and we lose that opportunity. You know, and usually these opportunities are rare. There's all kinds of opportunities, but that opportunity was rare. Yeah. Gary?
There's a Zen poem that sort of rolls together what has been talked about. It goes roughly as, if you eat, eat. If you drink, drink.
But whatever you do, don't wabble.
Yeah, right.
Don't what?
Don't wabble. Wabble? Ah. Wabble, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Wobble is something you can grasp. Wabbling really puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Quickly. You know, you talked about not eating before you meditate, and I kind of, you know, it's a pretty good idea, but I was thinking, like, on Wednesday nights, I get off work at 5 o'clock, come to the 7:15 meditation, then go to the class.
Eat.
Yeah,
no. Let's just be reasonable. Yeah, I'm not saying that as a law. Do not eat. Nothing is ever that way. See, but look at the situation. Obviously, if you're starving, you know, you've just crawled out of a cave and or something. You haven't eaten for a week. You know, no, there's a. You're just going by a concession stand, and then there's the Zendo just beyond, you know. Stop and have a bite and then go, you know. So, I mean, we put this in some kind of context, and yeah. But I'm just saying, as a general rule, you know, because just realize what's going on there with that, and it will make you less alert. And then when it's time to eat, then eat. And then when you become kind of sleepy afterward, you know, then take that up. Enjoy that. You know that. Just live it. That drowsiness. You know? Like, what was it in... is it one of the Cold Mountain poems, or...
She told.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage. Yeah, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Where he says, and after I've eaten, then I take a nap. Yeah, right. Which is very normal. You know, in some cultures where they have the... You know, they have the main meal at midday, you know, the fiesta, then they have the siesta, right? I mean, in the afternoon, then you take a nap. And it was culturally instituted, but it comes out of kind of a natural, you know, functioning. And the day even works that way. Do you ever notice, like, it's quiet at night, and at dawn, there's a lot of flurry, a lot of the birds are going, there's a lot of activity then during the hot hours in the early afternoon, and from noon to the early afternoon, it gets quiet again. Then toward evening, you know, if you're out in the woods or in the field, you know, there's a lot of activity going on again. So we have this kind of a cycle. That's in our culture, you know, through our thinking, and we just, you know, 9 to 5, whatever, we just kind of push on through. But we're not paying attention to our bodies and to our, you know, the cycle of the day and all of this. It's just, if we would tune into that more. You know, and then with that, you'd also find the kind of a natural time for just to take up the practice of meditation. Unfortunately, for most of us, I know it's very difficult for us to schedule our own day now in kind of a natural way, because we're so locked into the kind of the culture that we have. But if we all took on kind of an awareness of this, it seems to me, then maybe we could even restructure how we carry out our normal work-a-day life here. Well, anyway, I guess I have gone way over. I better end it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.